You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The housing crisis in New Zealand is a continuing issue that impacts all levels of our society. Last month, a report by UN Rapporteur Leilani Farah announced that housing in New Zealand is a human rights crisis. People in transitional housing have been overstaying government estimates, rent across the country is rising, and there simply are not enough houses being built. Today I tackle two aspects of the housing crisis in New Zealand, the construction of new houses and issues affecting rental properties. I first spoke to Benedict Ferguson, President of the Public Service Association, or the PSA, about their support for a new open letter aimed at Housing Minister Megan Woods. The open letter calls for a new industrial and integrated approach to housing. I first asked Benedict what exactly the open letter was asking of the government.
It's asking for a different approach to, I guess, first of all, is investing heavily in state housing and bringing about an industrial scale state housing building program. We're looking at what's been happening over the last 4 years, and Kāinga Ora is doing some great work, but we think is a different approach needs to be taken. The number of state houses is pretty much static, so you know, it might go up a few, but it hasn't gone up with what we need. We've got thousands of people on a waiting list for state housing, and we think the idea of industrial scale building programs is a great idea. We're also thinking that the way the government books are looking at the moment, there is this ability to borrow more money while borrowing is relatively cheap to invest in this space. The longer we delay things like this, the cost is going to be moved on to future generations. We know the cost of borrowing is likely to increase, and right now we think it's an opportune time to bring about a bit of a step change in how we do support housing, both in community, the infrastructure, that idea, but it does require a huge investment.
The open letter that PSA is supporting highlights the fact that Māori make up over half the state housing waiting list, while the proposed development will only provide around 1,000 houses to iwi over the next 4 years. What recommendations does PSA have to the government for a more equitable approach?
I'd say engaging with iwi around how you can co-develop things, and that primarily, you know, co-designing and co-governance of iwi-led initiatives would be a good place. It seems, you know, I find it hard to believe that that's the stats that we're showing, that we know Māori are on the lower end of all our sort of stats and that things. And the best way I can say to solve that is letting Māori design things for Māori. So bringing them into the table, working with them, maybe even handing over some of the design and ownership to them, which I know some organisations are doing, but really joining up and working in a much more cooperative way.
Do you have any other comments on government approaches to housing?
I guess it's engaging with those that can do it. We've got 80,000 members in our union who know, you know, they work in these industries. They work for Kāinga Ora, they work for local councils. So we have some knowledge that could be used. We think that there needs to be a much more integrated approach to housing, and that it's not just about housing too. People, you know, talk about we need houses, but we want to build that further. We want houses so that we can build really strong and resilient communities. And that comes along with, you know, infrastructure that's required. So there is not just the houses, but the infrastructure that your local councils provide. And we're pushing a bit further in our union as well. We're saying more public services are needed, and even things like internet becoming a public service. We know that there is a digital divide out there, and we think that an integrated approach to the, I guess, infrastructure, including internet connections, so that everyone has an internet connection in these communities, would really help drive a successful and prosperous community.
What does an integrated or an industrial approach to housing look like?
I guess there's the industrial scale building. I think that, you know, you can get scale when you're building en masse. So I know there are pockets of that happening in New Zealand. I'm not sure if Kāinga Ora are looking at that yet, but that idea of maybe it's prefab, but there's other ways of doing it. So that sort of industrial-wide or industrial scale, that would be one thing. And the integrated approach is that it's not just about housing. So what else comes with housing is, you know, safe communities, prosperous communities with, you know, social services, the pools, libraries, public transport, all the infrastructure underground, but creating places for people to live and work. What we don't want is, you know, communities being developed where there's no employment, things like that, or communities being developed where yet your infrastructure will come at a certain time later. It all has to be integrated so that when people move into those homes, they can live a prosperous life, they can work close by, they can engage in their local communities through those social services.
So it's not only about building more housing, it's about developing safe and healthy communities for everyone.
Yeah. It's about that community, I guess the social fabric of New Zealand, that sometimes we forget that when you live in a house, you're part of a community, and that identity to that community and all the things that can bring. And, you know, we want an integrated approach so that we're not seeing some areas get developed more than others, so that everyone can actually live the life that we want them to live in New Zealand.
That was Benedict Ferguson, President of the Public Service Association. After speaking about the construction of new houses with the PSA, I moved on to problems in our rental sector. Across New Zealand, the price of rental properties is continuing to rise, while the responsibility of the upkeep of rentals is often put onto the tenants. Green MP for Auckland Central, Chloe Sawbrick, has a solution. The Green Party have released a petition for a new rental warrant of fitness, a policy that will require landlords to provide healthy, livable homes and protect the tenants. I then covered solutions to the rise of rent. I began the interview by asking what the rental warrant of fitness is.
So a rental warrant of fitness is basically recognising that everybody deserves a warm, safe, dry home regardless of whether they own or rent. But when it comes to a rental warrant of fitness, that is to say that we are going to ensure that those homes are up to standard without people having to fight for it, without renters having to fight for it. So if we were to apply, for example, the 29 criteria that have been outlined by the University of Otago, they would effectively be the healthy home standards with a few additional points added on. Those are running hot water and ensuring that all electrical wiring is in place.
So why is this warrant of fitness necessary right now?
What we've heard from a number of renters, and I can even tell you from the thousands of responses we've had so far since our petition has been up, there are huge problems up and down this country where even though these healthy home standards have been a really important step forward to ensure that everybody supposedly has these rights, the onus or burden of proof basically sits on the renter to take their either property manager or landlord through the tenancy tribunal in order to enforce those rights or enforce those standards. This can be an expensive and time-consuming and potentially ruinous for that relationship between that renter and that landlord or their property manager. It makes far more sense to front-load any of that potential issue and just say we are going to provide effectively a licence all this warrant of fitness up front so that there is no future issues that arise.
Would there be a worry that the costs involved of like a rental warrant of fitness would be passed on to the renters?
Very important to contextualise this in the reality that the average rent, this is across the entire country, it obviously peaks a lot higher in places like Auckland and Wellington, but the average rent for a home is $500 per week in this country. Based on estimates from the University of Otago and from Wellington City Council, who've gone down the track of seeing what this would look like in practice, it would cost between $150 to $250 at maximum, that is half of the average weekly rent, for a warrant of fitness that would last for about 3 years if we were to implement a system like that. I think the other thing to know is that we constantly have landlords and particularly property investors associations threatening that rents are going to go up. And I have not found one landlord yet who is able to guarantee me that if a warrant of fitness was not to be brought in, that they would not increase rents. We had, for example, over the past 12 months, a situation where even though we had that 6-month rent freeze during the COVID lockdowns, we had a situation of the most fortuitous circumstances financially for landlords who have held mortgages in generations. Those are incredibly low interest rates, but we also saw landlords continuing to increase rents. So you can't say that these two things are connected. It definitely is the case that landlords pass on costs, but we've also seen that rents have increased far beyond that passing on of costs. Just to reflect on some research that was released about a day or two ago, by a data analysis published in the spin-off, we can see from 1993 that house prices, or rather rents, in and of themselves have effectively doubled, even when adjusted for inflation. But the quality of the housing stock has stayed effectively the same in the past 20 plus years.
With the increase in rent, are there any solutions that the Green Party has to sort of impact that in a way that it could be more equitable for renters?
Great question. We are also campaigning on rent controls. And this is something which I think has been really fascinating to watch play out in the political or parliamentary context, because I, for example, have put questions to Portal Williams, the Associate Minister for Housing, who has responsibility for areas like this, who has not said that the government is ruling it out, which, as you'll know, is relatively rare with this government, with this Labor kind of led government. And I have also challenged them on the fact that they provided a rental freeze during COVID-19 lockdowns over the last year, and that has had a massive impact with regard to the figures that they continue to quote about how rental increases were less last year than they have been in other comparable years. So the models that we're looking at here, and there's about 9 different proposals that you'll find on the Greens website. If you just Google rental controls and the Greens, you'll find them. And they kind of vary from a San Francisco type of approach where there are criteria that are imposed either at a local government or national level where you could say rents, you need to have X, Y, Z, and here are different criteria to figure out what the calculation would be of the rent. We could alternatively have a Swiss type of model, which I think is the one that most people I've spoken to have erred towards, where you have kind of a union for renters and you have a association or body of landlords. Both of those groups have representatives who once a year come together and negotiate the average rental increase for the people who are implicated in those properties, which is about 500,000 people in Switzerland. So that's a model which also looks really beneficial. And I think that that's another really important thing to continue putting on the table here, is that there is not one silver bullet to solve the rental crisis, to solve the housing crisis in this country. But the Greens are really clear that we need to move away from a system that commodifies something that is literally recognised as a human right by the United Nations, to which New Zealand is a signatory of.
That was Chloe Swarbrick, Green MP for Auckland Central. And before that was Benedict Ferguson, President of the Public Service Association.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.